Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a report from Beirut-based journalist Habib Battah about the claims just made on Hezbollah's Lebanese television network by the Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad that the Syrian army has won major victories and now holds the balance of power in the civil war. We will discuss the possibility of a peace settlement in Syria similar to what brought about an end to Lebanon's bitter civil war. Then the author of a new book, The New Hate, A History of Fear and Loathing on the Populist Right, Arthur Goldwag, joins us to talk about the migration of increasingly bizarre conspiracy theories into the mainstream media as anti-government hate speech propagated by right-wing senators like Ted Cruz and Rand Paul often surprisingly finds a sympathetic audience amongst people who consider themselves leftists. Arthur Goldwag has an article in The Washington Spectator, Alex Jones's Weather Weapons. Then finally, we'll hear about a new economic movement going on under the radar in America that is empowering local communities who are prospering independent from Wall Street. Historian, political economist, activist, and writer Gar Alperovitz joins us to discuss his article at The Washington Spectator, Something is Happening, The New Economic Movement, and his latest book, What Then Must We Do? Straight Talk About the Next American Revolution. Joining us now is Habib Battah, who's a Beirut-based journalist, media critic, and author of the blog BeirutReport.com. Mr. Battah has been a print and broadcast journalist for some of the Arab world's leading news organizations, including Qatar-based Al Jazeera, Lebanon's Daily Star newspaper, and the Beirut-based satellite channel Future Television. Welcome to Background Briefing, Habib Battah.
Thank you.
And the Syrian dictator Assad has gone on Lebanese television, the Hezbollah channel, I believe, Al-Manar, and has done an interview saying that the Syrian army has scored major victories against rebels and now holds the balance of power. How is that playing? I know this just happened, but I understand that there's growing tension in Lebanon between Hezbollah and the other factions in Lebanon in its frail polity. I guess the question is, how does Hezbollah sell the idea that they are heroes fighting against the Israelis when they're in Syria, fighting on behalf of a dictator?
Well, I think that military relationships around the world can be very unsavory, and I think that a lot of countries use certain kind of propaganda messages to reinforce beliefs that we can accept certain collateral damages if our cause is just. And I don't think that's limited to Hezbollah. So definitely you have a media a war going on as well, where the rebels are portrayed as being jihadists and extremists, and there have been definitely a lot of occasions where, you know, there have been kidnappings. We saw today John McCain's photograph was shown on the internet with some of the rebels who were accused of kidnapping Lebanese pilgrims. So all those images will play. Each side will choose its imagery and its crimes, you know. And of course, the biggest threat here for Hezbollah is the weakening of Hezbollah. And Hezbollah is seen by its supporters, and they're not a few supporters. They're, you know, probably, you know, half of the Lebanese population to, you know, a quarter, maybe more intense than others. But definitely a significant amount of the population supporting Hezbollah. And the idea is that if Hezbollah loses its support network, its supply line through Syria, that Israel will take advantage of the situation and pounce on the vulnerability of a weakened Hezbollah. And, you know, it's very important to people who live in the south and who have basically depended on Hezbollah for years that the organization continue to be intact because they fear the Israelis. So this is kind of one of those choosing lesser of two evils, that choice that people make and are led to believe in by the political leadership. So, you know, and, you know, we're seeing it happening on both sides in Lebanon.
So Habib Battah, do you have a sense, though, of what's happening on the ground? If Assad says they're winning, you don't necessarily have to take that at face value. Of course, he's going to say that. But a lot of other people seem to be supporting that idea. And it does seem that the Russians are committed, the Iranians are committed, Hezbollah is committed, to the survival of Assad. And obviously a lot of people in the West, including Hillary Clinton and the Turks apparently, thought that Assad's days were over a long time ago. So there seems to be an obvious contrast here between the commitment that the Russians, the Iranians, and Hezbollah have to saving Assad and the ambivalence on the West about what to do in terms of supporting the Syrian rebels.
I guess you could say that in some sense. Definitely that is the belief here that this is that what's happening does not represent the Syrian people. That these are groups of a lot of men who even came from Lebanon and other Arab countries to fight, and the money of Saudi Arabia and the money of Qatar. There is a weakness perceived, and the rebels have admitted that themselves. In Qusair, the rebels have been saying that if they don't get any support, that they will lose. So and when Nasrallah spoke a couple of days ago, well, it's been almost a week now, he made the big announcement that he confirming that Hezbollah fighters are in Syria. There was an intense barrage of gunfire near the neighborhoods. And usually, we hear gunfire when Nasrallah speaks, but this time it was almost like a victory gunfire. I mean, it went on for about almost 2 hours straight. So, there is definitely a belief that and Nasrallah did promise victory, and Nasrallah has usually delivered on his promises. So it's not clear if this time will be any different.
But that's not to say that there's a genuine uprising in Syria. The majority of the population is opposed to the dictatorship, and the dictatorship is unbelievably ruthless and unbelievably brutal. So what's your sense then of what's going to happen to all of those people? And there's millions of refugees involved who oppose Assad. They're not going to give up, are they, even if they're getting beaten?
Definitely. And I mean, there are a lot of Lebanese who support that and who are supporting the rebel forces. And a lot of Lebanese are housing Syrian refugees. I mean, it's a real crisis here with, almost one and four or five people being Syrian. And that's different than the other countries like Turkey and the Jordan, who have much larger populations. Lebanon's only a population of 4 million. So everybody is shouldering this this burden, whatever side they're on. Syrian refugees are all over Lebanon, and living in shacks and begging on the streets in the city. So it is a real crisis for everybody to deal with. The people that are doing the fighting is still a very small minority. I mean, we don't talk as much about the Hezbollah fighters as we do about the, Lebanese fighters that are fighting with the rebels. And they have been pouring into this conflict in the thousands, with a lot of weapons, since several months now. So far the battle has been restricted to Syria outside of Lebanon, even maybe rival Lebanese factions fighting in Syria. And it's been distant from the greater Beirut area, which most Lebanese live in. So it's been a distant battle. But occasionally it is kind of making people worry, and people are a bit tense and worried about what's going to happen in the months ahead. I mean, I just wanted to say one thing is that, it's easy to each side is really kind of drafting its own narrative to make it feel good about what it's doing and what it's invested in. But the truth is that, this is not really about one man or, a handful of men or a few thousand. I mean, we're talking about networks of patronage between Syria, the Syrian regime, and all the Lebanese political forces for decades. So you have, literally thousands and thousands of people that basically depend on a system, and probably even half of Lebanon almost to some extent. So really there is a fear beyond, Syria about Lebanon, and will the big change in the Syrian regime basically lead to, removing a pillar of the Lebanese, the foundation of the very shaky Lebanese power sharing system. So it's much broader than a dichotomy of one man versus a people.
Again, I'm speaking with Habib Bataz, a Beirut-based journalist, media critic, and author of the blog BeirutReport.com. Mr. Bataz has been a print and broadcast journalist for some of the Arab world's leading news organizations, including Qatar-based Al Jazeera, Lebanon's Daily Star newspaper, and the Beirut-based satellite channel Future Television. He's covered a range of political events from across the Middle East, including the Iraq War and the recent and ongoing turmoil in Syria and Lebanon. But given that Assad just appeared on Hezbollah television in Lebanon saying that basically the Syrian army has scored major victories and they hold a balance of power, and clearly this has been done with the help of Russian arms, Iranian arms, and in particular thousands of Hezbollah fighters, this has prompted at least some people on the Sunni side of Lebanon to fire a couple of rockets into the Hezbollah area. That could surely be a portent of worse things to come.
Are you talking about the rocket attacks on Beirut?
Right. Couldn't that be?
It's not clear where that came from or who did that. There isn't really evidence right now as to how that happened. It was kind of a one-off. There was no claim of responsibility, at least until recently. It doesn't seem that is heralding some big confrontation, at least so far, because of the fact that there hasn't been, it's been kind of a mysterious event. Again, this followed the next day. The day before that was this massive outpouring of gunfire celebrating Nasrallah's speech. So it wasn't just kind of out of the blue. At this point, we're not really sure, who has done it. But I mean, I would also add something about, talking about the Sunnis and sectarianism. Is I think that what's happening now, we also have to look beyond sectarianism. We have to look at, money and politics and the good old fashioned reasons that wars are fought. There happens to be some sectarian segregation, but that doesn't, at the end of the day, there is a lot of, patronage and money involved that both sides, might feel that they are bound to be in this conflict. So a lot of the villages on the Lebanese border are smuggling villages. They make their money off smuggling, fuel and that kind of thing. So now they're smuggling weapons. So the economic aspect there, again, Qatar and Saudi Arabia are pouring in a lot of money, and the Gulf countries are pouring a lot of money. So that's also a big incentive there. And also Lebanon, there are a lot of family ties between, villages that are Lebanese, divided during colonial times and colonial lines drawn that made, Lebanese villages in Syria. So a lot of Lebanese villages in Syria where people have family that they might want to go fight with, other relationships. And also the Christian community in Lebanon is very divided. The Christian community, is divided between, support for the rebels and support for the regime. And, I was just watching some Lebanese Christian television channels tonight and full of praise for Hezbollah and its valiance and fighting for Lebanese freedoms, as was said tonight. So it's really beyond sectarianism, and it comes down to who has been paying your bills for the last few decades and which side you have been on the payroll of.
So Habib Bataz, what would happen then if, for example, the U.S. and the European Union, who have been obviously reluctant to get involved, and the Turks seemed initially to be all in favor of getting rid of Assad, and maybe they predicted his demise far too early, but they don't seem to be particularly enthusiastic about supporting the rebels, and certainly the U.S. is not enthusiastic, but for Qatar and Saudi, I don't think they'd be getting any help anywhere. And we don't know whether these talks in Geneva are even going to happen. The Russians are sort of dampening them down, and they're talking about bringing in sophisticated anti-aircraft missiles and as a warning against hotheads, which was clearly, I think, a reference to Israel. And Israel said, if the defense minister said, if the Russian missiles come in, we know how to take care of them. So there's a possibility that this could end up in more of a regional war. But there's also a real possibility that Assad could win. But what would he win? And what would happen to all those disaffected people who have been murdered by his regime and whose families have been brutalized and who have been forced out of their own country?
Yeah, I mean, it is very hard to imagine things ever going back to the way they were. And I think that's pretty much a fantasy if anybody holds that idea. And I think that the solution that, is being called for here is negotiations, is some kind of political solution is the only way. That's how the conflict in Lebanon ended, was a political solution that, that was never thought possible. So, you know, it could be a lot more of what we're seeing today until there is the kind of a tiredness, I guess, and a fatigue with battle and getting weapons. You know, it could go any way right now. We don't really know. But, I mean, talking about it being a regional conflict, it already has been. I mean, Israel has been in the skies, you know, constantly in Lebanon over recent months, and they struck the Syrian bases, or, you know, we're not exactly sure what they were striking. There's the conflicted information about what it was that was struck, weapons probably. You know, and so there is a lot of involvement, and the United States and obviously the European Union has just, you know, agreed to lift the ban on sending weapons, and as if there weren't weapons that were also being smuggled this whole time. So that there is a very strong involvement by the region, and it's been that way. It just doesn't, you know, doesn't always seem so overt to people watching this on TV or reading about it. But, you know, weapons have been streaming in from Lebanon, especially. And I think a lot of people here are, you know, there is tension, there is worry. People are kind of confused, you know, because, you know, a lot of things don't, you know, there's a lot of messiness involved as well, you know. I mean, it's interesting to see Hezbollah right now talking about it's fighting a war against jihadists, you know, and it's fighting a war against extremists. And Hezbollah is painting itself as the, you know, the bulwark against the extremism. Whereas, you know, in the West, people, you know, would say Hezbollah is the extremist, you know. So a lot of redefining is going on, and a lot of, you know, narratives are being drafted. And a lot of people are very confused, actually, as what's going to happen.
Well, Habib Bataa, I thank you so much for joining us here. I know you stayed up late, so I appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Again, I've been speaking with Habib Bataa, who's a Beirut-based journalist, media critic, and author of the blog BeirutReport.com. Mr. Bataa has been a print and broadcast journalist for some of the Arab world's leading news organizations, including Qatar-based Al Jazeera, Lebanon's Daily Star newspaper, and the Beirut-based satellite channel Future Television. He has covered a range of political events from across the Middle East, including the Iraq War and the recent and ongoing turmoil in Syria and Lebanon. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about conspiracy theories.